Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Schooner Show, a four-part episode podcast where four college students explain all the ins and outs of what college life is like at the University of Oklahoma. You can follow The Schooner Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Please make sure to leave a like and give us a good review. All right, let's get to The Schooner Show. Check out Simple Modern. Simple Modern exists to give generously. As a leading drinkware and consumer goods company, Simple Modern gives at least 10% of annual profits to communities around the world. The Oklahoma-owned company offers premium quality products and unique styles for adults and kids at generous prices. Go check out their quality products at simplemodern.com. Simple Modern, good everywhere. And attention college or high school seniors. Graduation is approaching quickly and senior pictures are a must. Brittany Stover Photography offers high-class senior photos for any season. Check out her work on Instagram at Brittany Stover Photography and book a session today.
Okay, it is football season in Oklahoma, and Blushed Boutique has all your game day fashion needs to keep you stylish and ready for Oklahoma game days. Grab your game day outfit today from Blushed Boutique and be prepared for all your apparel needs.
All right, and this is our final episode. We have a special guest on the podcast later today, and so we're just going to go straight into it. But first, before we get to anything, my name is London Stover.
I'm Adeline Sewell.
I'm Orion Buckner.
I'm Matthew Troutman.
All right, and we will be interviewing Barry Switzer today. So we're going to head to that, so jump into that right now. All right, we are joined now with one of Oklahoma football's all-time legends. He has won 3 national titles, won 12 conference titles, and has a Super Bowl ring. Please welcome Coach Barry Switzer.
Yay. Hey, good to be here. Good to be here, guys.
Coach, girls, how are you doing?
Doing good. An old man, not bad.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So, just to fill you in, our podcast is basically about what college life is like at the University of Oklahoma, and we just wanted to bring someone on who has major history here. So we're just glad you're on the podcast. So you've been out of coaching for a while now, and I was just wondering, like, what have you been up to recently that people may not know about?
Well, I've been out of coaching for, I coached the 60s, the 70s, yeah. The 80s, and 90s. And the last 20 something years, I've been in private business. I've had a lot of business partners different LLCs I'm involved in, and they call me. I'm kind of what I call a door opener. I open the door and get my partners in there where they make their presentations and all. Mm-hmm. So I have been successful with one real partner called Mike Henry. Is a guy he and I started together 50 years ago. We started Sooners Illustrated together. It was amazing. Oh, okay. Yeah, this is back nice. Before you had the internet or anything like that, and no one was even doing their own school magazine. And I was interested because I wanted to have Sooners Illustrated on every table in the state of Texas on the top blue chip players of that. Yeah. And I wanted every Southwest Conference coach to walk in and say, Sooners Illustrated, they don't even have a magazine. We can see we got one. So we started the magazine, and I helped him get it started. I raised the money for it, and it still exists today. Yes. So we ended up 13. We had 13 schools. But we ended up making it a business. We did Huskers Illustrated, Longhorn Illustrated. We did Trojans Illustrated, Huskers Illustrated, Hogs Illustrated. We did a lot of schools. And this gentleman here also, Mike Henry, we started a business. And I get to talking too much. You know, y'all shut me down. But we started another business in 1996 when I was coaching the Cowboys. After one of the home games, we were sitting in my box having a drink. And he says, how come colleges don't have these big jumbotrons out here in the middle in the stadiums, big Mitsubishi video boards? Yeah. And I said, it's called Title IX. Athletic director spends $10 million in men's sport. He's got to do it in women's sports. He said, I thought so. Can you get me an appointment with DeLoss Dodds, who was just appointed the athletic director at the University of Texas? And DeLoss I had known because he had been an assistant commissioner in the Big 8 Conference. And where I'd coached with Oklahoma for years. And so I called DeLoss. I said, I got a guy you'll need to meet with. So he went down there and told him what he asked the same question. How come you don't have a big jumbotron? And He says, Title IX. He said, well, I'll tell you what, well, I buy it, we buy it, and we put it in here, and once we get our money back, we on advertising, we become partners at 50-50. And the law said, where'd I sign? And it was a win-win-win for him.
Wow, that's awesome.
So we ended up doing 19 other schools, including Alabama, Tennessee. We had we didn't have OU because OG&E already had them signed up, right. And they still do today. But that company still exists, and it's called StadiaNet, and that's Bella. Bella is my lab, 12-year-old nope. lab. She's little, got stage fright.
Yeah, she's a little shy of the camera.
Yeah, shy camera. But anyway, I do a lot. But I'm in farming. I do.
Cool.
It's not traditional farming. It's hydroponic farming, and it's the future of farming where you can have a facility where it's 70. Well, it's July and August every day of the year in there, and you can grow 7 or 8 or 9 crops depending on what produce or what you're trying to grow. And you know, a farmer goes, puts in 100 acres of corn out here, he's got to hope it rains, gets the right, you know, weathered and all, and to get one crop. And we can really produce a lot of crops because of this type of farming. So we're in that, and we're doing businesses in the we're actually out of state. We're in Bogota, Colombia. We have farms. I'm giving you a history lesson here. You know how large Bogota is? It's right at 8 million people. It looks like New York City.
Really?
Oh, wow.
It's in the mountains, about 10,000 feet high. It's 50 to 60 degrees year round there. And it's a big, beautiful city. And we've got some farms there. We're under contract for about 11 farms to get the first pick on their herbs. We this country does not have the herbs it needs, and especially Walmart. And we've got a vendor number with Walmart. They're hard to get, and we've got one. And I need to turn this off.
And
I'll try to figure.
Perfect.
That was a business right there. We're. Yeah, and a lot of different right. things, but it's just that keeps me busy. And I've got the experts and the people know how to build these things and run them and hire the people and all the logistics of it. And I'm just a guy that tags along with them,
that's awesome.
And a partner with them. Yeah,
that's good.
So I stay busy.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. I appreciate you for telling that. I was just going to ask, like, when you were a coach, what was OU campus/college life like back then? Like, what was it like compared to now?
Well, that's a question I answer kind of often because I see it and I see it how it's changed mm-hmm. so much. The game has changed from when I used to recruit. NCAA didn't have control of Oklahoma or Texas, or we weren't supervised by them. Each conference had its own legislation, had its own rules, own scholarship offering. They determined their own, what they did within their league. OU, we had 90 scholarships over a 2-year period. Mm. We could give 45 or 50 a year scholarships. And we always did that. Then in 1972, the NCAA took control and we all went under their umbrella and went to a 30 scholarship limit, made freshmen eligible again, and we allowed still redshirt kids, but we could only take 30 a year, which is a good number. Most people still state you could are able to be able to do well with that.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that really changed is kids back then when we recruited them. Mothers and fathers, if there was a father in a home, they wanted them to get an education.
Right.
And they came here to spend, they knew they were going to be here 4 or 5 years. And they were redshirt, play freshman ball, redshirt, then have 3 years of eligibility and play. And they knew that if they stayed, they played. And they wouldn't have been recruited unless they had the talent to play for. So we had a lot of players. We got to know them. We knew them very well. We knew their mamas, their dads. So it's a different environment. Today, kids here, because of new rules, we're in the portal 1 year, might be here a year, in the portal the next word, and they're gone. and they're not here to get an education anymore. They all think they're going to play professional football. They're not. Only about 2 or 3% of them ever make it in professional football. And I don't even know how in the world they can get an education if they go to 2 or 3 different schools.
Right.
And it's just they're not apt to get an education. Obviously, that's not the main goal. It used to be the main goal is having kids come to school to get an education and play football too. But that's changed so much. And with NIL now, it's I don't know what the true where we'll ever get to, whatever. Yeah. I've always advocated they pay everybody the 85. They're only allowed to have 85 scholarships today.
Right.
And so I'd say that they ought to pay 85 players the same amount, every school in the country, and pay it, whether it's $5,000, $10,000 a month, whatever it is, everyone makes that. Now, if you are an All-American, Heisman Trophy, or you have that type of ability and you excel on the field, all athletes know who the best players are and they recognize their play. And then they can go out and sell themselves for more in the market and NIL and get as much money as they can. No one would begrudge them that. But it would give everybody a base salary or base compensation, and I've always been an advocate for that, giving the center as much as a quarterback made on a basis of 85. Then once they've proven themselves, they all can go sell to whoever they want, you know. And no one would begrudge them to doing that.
For sure. It's kind of interesting. Like you see all these guys like that transfer after like a couple of years and then like go to different schools and stuff. You don't really see like guys going, staying for like that 5 years as much, you know, like your Danny Stutzman or even Baker, you know? And I feel like, I don't know if it's ruining the sport, but I mean, I feel like it's just not as special as it
used. Well, it is now just the beginning of the NIL, so we're going to find out how special it gets, because it's just now beginning. When Baker was here, you know, Baker transferred here, and I think he had the red shirt, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that was back when you transferred, you had to sit out of here and become eligible. That happened a lot back then, too. But now you can go immediately be eligible to play and be in the portal and bounce around and play 5 or 6 different schools.
Yeah, it's just like wherever you get the most money, I guess.
Yeah. Kind of like, it's just like free agency. It's kind of what it feels like a little bit, like you're in the NFL. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, too, I mean, it as someone who is an athlete, and obviously it's interesting to see the differences between how they handle it in golf and versus football. Mm-hmm. So, like, right now for golf, you can transfer once within D1, and you don't sit out any years, but as soon as you do hit that second transfer, then you have to sit out a year. But within football, from what I understand, there's no regulations like that.
I didn't think there was. I haven't heard of one.
I'm pretty sure you can. And then now, I don't know, kind of leading into a little bit of the next question, have you heard about the roster cap limits for the teams and kind of how that's going to look?
No, the cap limits on the roster, right? They only have a total of 85 right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't see how they can cut it any more than that.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what the number was for football. I am not completely sure, but for example, with like golf, they're cutting the SEC, because there's still court cases going on right now. But SEC is not waiting for that, and they're going to go ahead and go forth with it. So with golf specifically, they're cutting it to 8 people. Mm-hmm. When we've got a bigger team, we've got 13. So like for our program, there's supposed to be 3 guys leaving, 3 guys coming in. So we're still going to have 13. So they're going to have to figure out, like, we're going to have to dump 5 guys. And you kind of got to figure out what's going to happen. And for us, it's just another byproduct of that opened up when NIL came.
I'm not familiar with that in football, but I don't know how you get lower. You know, you have to have practice.
Yeah.
People to practice against. And, professional football, we'd always have 80 to start preseason. Then we'd always have to cut to a total of 53 travel squad. And then we'd always have 6 or 8 that were on the roster for practice purposes and allowed to pay a salary, a nice salary. They made a nice salary for being on the practice squad, but they only allowed 53 on the travel squad. And they were paid differently than they negotiated their own contracts, and obviously, you know, did well with that. But I don't know what will happen in college football. None of us know. No.
Yeah, right. It's definitely a wild card because it, like, yeah, it all went down in, like, 2020, 21, and then coming into even last year is changing. You go back home for the summer, and then we came back home, and originally the university couldn't help with any NIL transactions at all, and then suddenly they can help pretty heavily in the aid. Just how it's changing from month to month. It's a pretty interesting time to be in college and involved with college athletics.
Right.
Even just being a fan.
It also affects walk-ons. Have you all heard about that?
Yeah.
What do you think about? I heard they're saying that they might do away with walk-ons. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. They have. I think they allow 5 preferred walk-ons.
Okay.
I think that. And that's to help in preseason too, to practice. And I don't know what,
right.
they stay the entire season, I think. Yeah. Preferred walk-ons, and if they burn a scholarship, that's great. But yeah, but there are a lot more players out there today than there used to be, and so there are a lot more kids that are more have the ability to make teams. Back we were taking, I'd have 200. Are more dressed out, and we'd have to have red shirts, white shirts, then we'd have orange and blue and black and all
yes,
different, because your numbers can only go up to 99.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go to 3 digits, so we would have to have, we'd call them by the orange team, the blue team, the red and the white are obviously the top 2 teams.
Yes, sir.
But we would have the other teams to practice, and we'd have a depth chart of 8 teams, so we had that number of players on the, or more on the team, 8 or 9 teams. Back when we took 50 a year.
It almost seems like kind of everything that you did when you were coaching for so long, it just seems like the framework is not completely changing, but it definitely seems like everything's kind of up in the air.
Yeah, it's
not sure.
It's we don't know where we're going. They don't know either.
Yeah.
No. I don't, yeah.
What are you going to ask, girl? Don't you know anything about football? Haven't you coached? Played?
I haven't, but you know me. I've been going to the game since I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm. I know that. I know your mom, too.
Yeah. My mom dressed me up in those cheerleader outfits. If y'all know anything about, the little girl cheerleading outfits for OU, that's what I was in when
that's
I
what my sister's
was growing up.
But
I guess I can ask, with the move to the SEC, were you seeing a lot of new faces? With us seeing a lot of new faces every week, would you have wanted to make the move to SEC while you were head coach?
No, I tell you what, we were at that point in time, Oklahoma and Nebraska and Miami are the top 3 teams in the country. We were perennial, Texas, we could throw them in there too, but we were the perennial top teams in the country, and many times we would play Nebraska and Oklahoma, be number 1, number 2 in the nation, both of us would be undefeated, and play for the Big 8 Conference Championship and National Championship. We've had many of those games, and we were the best. We played SEC teams then, Southeast. We played everybody. We played USC. We played Eastern teams, and we played some SC teams, but we were a different football team in that era.
Yeah, I agree. Well, this is a funny question, kinda. How did you get the Boz to come to OU?
Well, he was an outstanding football player. When I went to see him, he was kid at Irving MacArthur High School in Dallas, Texas, and he was recruited by everybody. LSU coaches told me when I ran into them when I was visiting his high school, they said he could start for them as a freshman. He could have started for us as a freshman, but I happened to have a two first-round draft choices starting for me already.
Mm-hmm.
They were seniors. Jackie Shipp, who was a 13th player, I think, picked in the first round, linebacker, and Thomas Benson, who played for the Chargers, were really good players. And I didn't want to waste a year of eligibility. And so I talked him into redshirting along with four other linebackers. Bosworth was a first-round pick. Dante Jones from Skyline High School was a first-rounder. I had redshirt in that class. We had Daryl Reed, started 4 years for me, all Big Eight 4 years in a row. Troy Johnson, outstanding player. These are all Texas kids. And then I had Daryl Reed from Richardson, Texas, another fifth. They were all, he played about 9 years from Tampa Bay. But all of them are outstanding players. And so I redshirted that group. And the next year, they were my starting team for the next 4 years, along with Tony Casillas at nose guard, who was the second player picked in the draft. He was the first defensive lineman to be picked in the draft, second player. And my tackles were good and talented. And so we were really a good defensive team with Boz and the other guys. And so we depth we had. And our offense was really good. We were good on offense, and we played for a couple of national championships and won one of them, that group, in the 80s.
Impressive team.
Nice. Yeah, that's
awesome. You did a lot during your time.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I had good players, good coaches, good players made it all happen, and we were very fortunate to come in the right time and the right place.
Yeah.
So kind of going off of the Boz, you coached a lot of fantastic players in your time as a head coach at OU. Who were some of your favorites and why?
Well, Keith Jackson was a first-round pick. He was, and let me tell you something about, go back to Boz. Boz and Keith Jackson were both outstanding athletes, but they were outstanding students too. Both graduated in 3.5 years. They both were 3.5 students. Keith Jackson was NCAA Scholarship Athlete of the Year. He played a cello. He was very musically inclined. I've never known anybody play a cello. But he was a great player. He was an NFL Rookie of the Year in Pittsburgh. Philadelphia. He caught 82 balls, which was the most fresh balls any freshman rookie had caught at that time at playing tight end for the Eagles. So he had an outstanding career, 10 years, won a Super Bowl with Green Bay, and then went back to Little Rock to start a foundation that caused positive atmosphere reaches kids at risk. And it was a foundation to help kids that wanted to get an education that were denied it because of certain things at home or family life. He didn't want any athletes. He wanted just kids that really hungered for an education, and he got all the colleges in the state, 17 of them, including the University of Arkansas, to give him scholarships, and they all give him scholarships. He's been doing this for 30 years, and he's graduated so many kids that have gone on to be doctors, lawyers, and all that probably wouldn't ever have a chance to be if he hadn't gone back and started this program. That after school, they'd get on a Yellow Dog school bus and would drop him off, they'd drop these kids off at a facility at Walmart, and Tyson and all these people contributed to. They built a beautiful facility, but it was for academics first. And then once they spent 2 hours in academics to raise their grade level up, and they had retired teachers and that helping out. And then they didn't close till 10 o'clock at night, so mothers that were working second jobs or whatever could come pick up their kids, and they all had police officers there, so they had protection. They had everything working for them and community, and he has done extremely well with that. He's Arkansas Man of the Year twice in the state of Arkansas. No one else has ever done that. But Boz was also a great student and graduated in 3.5 years, and very smart, articulate, good speaker. But so Dr. Pepper today.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't grow up in OU football, and I'm getting acclimated, and this is my third year here now. But whenever I talk to my dad, whenever the Boz gets brought up, his favorite commercials are those Dr. Pepper commercials.
Oh, yeah.
So he'll say
Mansville.
Yeah, he'll say something because I think he saw him at one of the games. I think it was the Tennessee game. He was doing some promotional stuff for it, and he saw him pop up, and he's like, He was trying to give me a lesson. It's like, oh, it's the boss. He's the guy in Dr. Pepper. And then he was an incredible OU linebacker. So.
Yeah, he's a great player. You go look at his highlights on YouTube. Oh, yeah. And he had the greatest knack, great speed and quickness. He had the ability to rush, blitz, and he'd be in the backfield and destroying everything before.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's just so amazing, his quickness and all. He was a force on the field defensively.
Yeah. I'll never forget the 30 for 30 that ESPN did, kind of with him and his time at, mm-hmm. at OU. It I remember watching it when I was really young, and then I watched it again when I got here, and just to see the intensity that he played with and kind of everything.
He would have been a Butkus Award winner 3 years in a row if he had come back. He won it twice and would have won it three times if he hadn't kicked his ass off the team. What else do you want to know, guys?
Well, what is your favorite recruiting story that you can tell us?
My favorite recruiting story? I have a lot of them, girl. I mean, just recruited as long as I did, and as many players, and traveled as much as I did. There's so many of them. Everyone brings up the one about Pearl Beer. I was recruiting a kid out of Killeen, Texas, and the high school coach told me, when you're going to home as an old dad, when you meet the dad, he's going to be sitting in a big easy chair. He weighs about 350, and he's going to probably offer you a beer. And some of the coaches like need to know this because they might have a second visit, because Killeen was a big school, and you might be trying to recruit someone else from there too. Mm-hmm. So, which we were. Before we went into home, I had the assistant coach drive me down. It was kind of in an average community. We had alleys, and I told him, go down this alley. And he said, why? And I said, well, just go drive down the alley. And I drive down the alley. I said, stop here, because I'd counted off how many houses. I got out and looked in the trash and got back in the car and said, let's go. So we got back in the house, and we came back into the house, knocked the door, and we went in and went all through the formalities. And we're sitting there, and I'm sitting there. The daddy's sitting here, and mother's in the kitchen. And I'm visiting with the dad. We've gone through all the, whatever you do in recruiting, meeting each other, talking a little bit. And then he finally, old dad got around to her. He said, would you like to drink a beer with me? I said, only if it's a Pearl. He said, you like Pearl? I said, yeah. It's only, they don't sell it in Oklahoma, but that's all the thing my coaching staff drinks, and I have to take cases of it back when I travel back. I got to take the springs out of my back seat and just load it down of 26 cases of Pearl while it holds my back seat. And he's looked at me, and he said, you're kidding me, aren't you? Hey, I'm shitting you a little bit. And he laughed, but he said, I have a Pearl with you. So we had a Pearl, and the other one that I really was always ready for is, because I got asked a few times, is that I had a grandmother out, and I was in West Texas. We were in a trailer park, and I was recruiting this tackle out of this trailer park, and Daddy worked in the oil patch, and there's a grandmama and mama and the daddy and the mother and the prospect. They were sitting on a couch there, and my grandmama was sitting over here in a rocking chair, rocking back and forth. I'm sitting in just an old straight back wooden chair there from the dining table, and I was talking about our program and all, and answering questions of mom and dad. But the grandmother sitting over with a frown on her face, rocking back and forth, never said a word. And she sat there for 2 hours, never said a word. And I know I'm going to have to say something before I leave, because if I do, she's going to look there, she's going to say, he never asked me a question, She didn't like me anyway. She didn't like our program or whatever. So she had preferred them. She had someone else she liked instead of us. So I got around to about time for me to go, and I looked at Grandmama, and I said, Grandmama, I know you've been sitting there for 2 hours listening to all this. I know you got to have some questions on your mind. And if you got any questions you'd like to ask me, you better do it now, because I doubt whether I've got to see 90 kids visit in Texas, and I doubt whether I would get a chance to come back here again. And unless your grandson there wants to come to school here, and I'd probably come back. And she looked at me and says, yeah, I got a question to ask you. Here, y'all got a drug problem up there. I looked her right in the eye, and I looked back at the family. I said, no, ma'am, we don't. You can get all you want anytime you want. And of course, it went right over her head, but the mom and the daddy just died laughing. And the kid did. I said, just like you can in Dallas, like you can in Houston, like you can in Waco, like you can in Fort Worth. If you want it, you can get it. We don't have a drug problem.
Oh my God.
Well, I have a random question. Do you have any stories about Wilt Chamberlain?
No, I just saw him play, and when I was in college in 1958, I was playing at Arkansas. I was a junior, and we hitchhiked to Lawrence, Kansas, to see Arkansas happened to be win the Southwest Conference championship that year in basketball, and we were playing a team. And they only had four regionals in, 16 teams for the final four were then. And I had four regionals. Orange, Kansas is one of them. Name is Alonzo. Oh, that's a field house there. We went to the field house there, and I knew we could get in because Jack Mitchell had been the head coach at the head coach at Arkansas that year and taken Kansas' job. So we had played for him and the whole staff. So we knew we could get in. They'd get us in the back door or whatever. So three of us hitchhiked up there. We'd stayed in some fraternity house in this upstairs in the bunks or whatever. And the next day we go to the games and we go in there and I get to see Eddie Sutton bring the ball down. Eddie's playing for Oklahoma State, Coach Iba. He's bringing the ball down for Oklahoma State and they're playing Kansas State, Jack Hartman's teams. And Jack Hartman's team beats him. Bob, he had a guy named Bob Boozer played in the leagues NFL for a long time. He was a really great player. And I saw Wilt Chamberlain sitting down in front of me. He was sitting there on his bleachers, had his hands on his knees, but his knees are up about here. His head his head was between his knees, that beanie cap on. And Kansas didn't make it that year. Kansas State had beaten them and got into the Final Four. And I got to see Eddie Sutton bring the ball down, get beat. Now I got to see Arkansas come out and play this team, and with 3 minutes to go in the game, Arkansas had 54 points, and Oscar Robertson had 56, and he had outscored our entire team. He's a sophomore at Cincinnati He didn't get to play as a freshman, and that's the first time I'd seen a guy have a 40-inch vertical jump, and, I knew why vertical jumps were so important, because our guys had about 20 inch, they'd go up and they'd come back down, his team would elevate, and he'd shoot that slow rotation ball, and just bottom of the net would just quiver. He'd bring the ball down, pass it off. But he was truly one of the great basketball players of all time, Oscar Robertson. But it was really neat to see Chamberlain sitting there, but to see Oscar Robertson play and see a great athlete like him play, start out his career as a sophomore. You're just, it was unbelievable. That's that type of talent. But I couldn't play the game, so I just stuck with football.
I think that was the right choice.
Yeah. You were a great football coach, weren't you?
Well, I won a lot of games. I had a lot of success because I had a lot, like I said, I had good coaches, good players. We coached them up good. Yeah. And they played well.
I think you were better as you were a really good mentor. You're a really good coach, but I think overall you were a really good mentor for the football players in helping them and getting them through their education, because obviously we're going to college and education is really important, and you were.
I tried to stress that, and I tried to remind them all that's why they were there, and I wanted them all to be successful there. We spent more time with the player off the field than we ever did on the field, so we got to know them real well, and ate in the chow hall every day with them, every meal in the evening with them. You know, we got to know our players well because of the system then, because kids they weren't in a hurry. They didn't transfer anywhere. They stayed with you. Those that stayed there played.
Yeah.
Definitely seems like more of a environment for character development.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. Yeah. You really develop relationships. That's why I have so many great kids that I have great relationships with today, because of fact that we had that right type of atmosphere and system working for us and relationship. We will be with them for a long time.
Yes, sir. That's awesome. Well, we appreciate you.
Go ahead.
As London was talking about earlier, you've led us to many memorable seasons. Are there any particular games that stick out to you?
Yeah. The ones that I lost. It's never the ones you win. It's the ones you lose that you know you should have won.
That's the only right answer right there.
1978, we had won the national championship in 74, 75. 1978, we had the best team in the country, without a doubt. I mean, we were undefeated all year long. We were number one in the country. Great defense. I had Billy Sims won the Heisman that year. Greg Roberts was Outland Trophy winner. My defense had both linebackers who were great. Cumby was a first round pick and a two-time All-American. We had Daryl Hunt from Odessa Permian as a great linebacker. I had the Tabor Twins. They all, Phil started for the New York Giants as a defensive end his rookie year. Just had a lot of good players. And offensively, we were really good. We had Billy Sims, David Overstreet. He was the 10th player picked in the first round. Yeah. I had the Kenny King. He was a first round, 20th pick something. He was a first round pick. Played in the league about 10 years. Of course, Billy's the first overall pick in the league and the Heisman Trophy winner. So and I had Thomas Lotz, my quarterback, all from Texas. They're all great players, blue chip players. And we went up there and fumbled 9 times and lost 6 of them to Nebraska, and they only won 17-14. If they'd done that, we'd done that for us, we would probably hang half a hundred on them up there. But we lost that game because we beat ourselves. And that we knew that the team, we were going to have to help the team beat us because we were that good. So we get to replay. We get to rematch with them. And we go play them again in the Orange Bowl. We had them 31-10 in the fourth quarter. We didn't lose a fumble that night. And if we had done that the first game, we would have been national champions and we'd beaten anybody we played in the Orange Bowl and we'd had another one. But I regret that game of all of them because that was certainly a national championship team that didn't get to win the national championship.
Well, I'm so sorry about that. But speaking on losses, what are your thoughts of the current OU football team?
Well, like a lot of the fans, you know, that you got to live in someone's house to know what's going on there. But just from a fan's perspective, I can see that our quarterback doesn't have protection. Their offensive line's not very good. I don't know their problems. But like I said, you got to live in someone's house to be able to evaluate what's going on. And quarterbacks are very inexperienced. All the receivers are out. They say our top 5 receivers are out.
Yeah, that's your biggest problem.
And we don't have a great running back or a difference maker there. And that's hard for Oklahoma not to have someone like that, because we usually do. But we don't. That kid that played the other day plays hard, and he's tough. Guy, and he's a try hard guy, makes some good things happen, but we're not nearly there yet, and I don't know what's going to happen in the future here. Recruitment, Southeastern Conference is hard to recruit against, you know, because they have the bigger, stronger players. They have the diversity down there is different. You look at the diversity in Oklahoma, we have about 6% minority diversity here. Kansas has 0, Nebraska about 2, and Mississippi about 60-40, Louisiana about 65-35, all Georgia across there, all the South. It's just the numbers are huge, and the great big giant linemen, you know, 6'6", 375, they got guys like that can run. Yeah. And if you ever look at the draft, the first, second, third rounds of the draft, all of them are Southeast Conference linemen. Yeah. They're big offensive and defensive players picked. And so they've got the depth and size, and we don't have that here. Now, back when I was coaching Texas, we we kind of dominated, Oklahoma dominated Texas. Not everybody was recruiting Texas in. It was just Southwest Conference and Oklahoma and a couple other schools tried to come in there, but they didn't have a chance. But and we were winning, and I was recruiting the best players at all positions. I was playing a black quarterback for the Southwest Conference or the Southeastern Conference, even recruited a black player. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a jump up by having that philosophy to recruit the best players at all positions. And we did that, and we had a reputation for doing that, so that helped us tremendously. We really got a jump start on people, and we dominated the 70s, won more games than anybody in the 70s, and we won nine straight Big 8 conference championships during that period of time. We were really good. And then in the 80s, I had a good run, too, when I got that good group. I redshirted and Keith Jackson, all those guys. Ricky Dixon, those y'all was really good players.
Yes, sir.
Well, kind of going away from football and everything, what would be good advice that you would give to incoming freshmen at the University of Oklahoma?
I would say get a smile on your face, stick your hand out, meet everybody you could, and introduce yourself. Take the initiative, too. The most important thing I think that these players won't have today that my players had is networking. We knew the seniors when they were freshmen. The freshmen knew the freshmen. You know, eight classes of people, and who you know in life is really determines, you know, networking is so important to get in business. And you only find that out once you're out of school is those relationships that you had along the way. And I tell young men that we all define ourselves by how we interact with other people. And first impressions are formed by how you conduct yourself and introduce yourself to someone. And you can be arrogant, you can be aloof, you can do all that, you can do all those negative things we think of. Or you can just simply be nice, and nice is the best thing because that gives you, it doesn't cost you anything. And the rewards are tremendous, and because it'll come back to you. Might not be that week, that month, that year, but it's going to come back to you. It has to me before. People remind me of things I've done years ago that they appreciated so much that do return to you. So we all define ourselves by how we conduct ourselves in the presence of others, and I try to make that them understand that how important that is, and take the initiative to meet people, know people, and don't have that big tough guy look on your face and you're scared to death freshman. You know, just be a big smiling big old freshman boy that just want to go around and meet everybody, be friendly with everybody, and they'll be amazed how that helps you, and everybody will remember your name, and they'll yell at you when they see you on campus, and wave at them, speak back to them. Many friends as you can have helps you in life.
It's funny. I freshman year, I remember in dorming, you see these football players, like these linemen that come in, and you're like, oh my gosh, how is this guy a freshman? And I remember Jacob Sexton, I had a class with him, and we would kind of walk around the same time. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking to class with him one time, and I struck conversation with him. And he was a big dude, but he was like a teddy bear.
Yeah.
He obviously not in the field, not quite like a teddy bear, but when talking to him, like, I'm never going to forget him and that interaction and what he's like because of how nice he was and interactive.
He gave you a different impression of him. When you look at someone, you say, well, he's going to be this way until you get to know him. Then you realize he's not that way.
Yeah.
You
know,
he's no different than you are. He's an 18-year-old kid, scared to death when he comes to school. That's Roxy. She's a Belgian Malinois. She's crazy.
It's a dog.
Crazy dog.
Oh, yeah.
But,
it's a good environment in here.
Yes.
But,
keep trying to toes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Coach, do you think we got all the questions
today? Yes, sir. Well, we appreciate you.
Man, you're welcome.
Thank you so much for hopping on the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much. Well, good. Hope you all get a good grade.
Me too.
Yeah.
Well, guys, please thank you and comment below for having Coach Switzer on. We really appreciate you doing this for us. Yeah. And we will get back to the Schooner Show.
See y'all.
Yep,
the Schooner Show.
Also, thank you so much again, Barry Switzer, for letting us interview and giving some of our incoming freshmen and our other audience some ins and outs of OU and what it's like being here at the University of Oklahoma. But yeah, we want to give a special thanks to you. Comment below if you really liked the interview. And please don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our social medias are Schooner_Show.